We'd like to call the Committee on Environmental Natural Resources to order.
Tell me your name again.
Thursday, January 13th.
That'd be easy.
First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody. Folks, you're going to see senators coming and going today. We do have some excused and some that are having some time constraints and juggling of schedules yet with leadership as far as appointments, so they'll be coming and going. A quorum is not present. However, we don't need a quorum when we're just doing informational stuff, so we'll move forward. First thing on the agenda is introduction of our new commissioner, Tom Landwehr. Tom is here. You've got a little bio, and I think in your packet there, and I asked Tom if he would come forward and introduce himself as the new face of the DNR, and we welcome you to the committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Ingebrigtsen and members of the committee. I'm very delighted to be here today. Thank you very much for having me today, for letting me come and introduce myself, and thank you as well to Governor Dayton for his confidence in placing me in this position. For the record, my name is Tom Landwehr. I am the new Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I've been on the job now presumably since Thursday, although I've been in the office a total of about 6 hours, and mostly flying around the state and doing lots of other things in the interim. You've all got my bio. I thought I would start out by telling you that I'm delighted to serve. I think the highest aspiration in life is to be able to serve people, and the only thing that can be a higher aspiration than that is when you can serve people and nature at the same time, and I'm delighted to be able to do that in this new position. You can see in the bio, I have worked in conservation for about 30 years. I started with the Department of Natural Resources back in the early 80s. I worked for the DNR for 17 years when I went to the Ducks Unlimited. And I worked for Ducks Unlimited doing their conservation programs in two states, Minnesota and Iowa, for about 5 years. And I've been at the Nature Conservancy since 2003, where I finished prior to coming here. I've also had the joy of being a city council member in the city of Shoreview for two terms. And I am adjunct faculty at the University of Minnesota in the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I've also served on a couple of watershed management organizations and watershed districts in the metro area. So I feel like I've been in training for this position for 30 years, and I think the broad perspectives that I can bring, both as an elected official as well as a constituent from the other side of the table, as well as an avid outdoors person, I hunt, fish, camp, canoe, bike, do a lot of the things that the department is intended to serve. So I think I can bring a lot of different perspectives to the table that I hope will serve you well, serve the citizens of the state well over the next 4 years. I don't have much more to say. I wanted to just have a chance to introduce myself. I'd be delighted to take any questions. I don't have, at this point in time, a grand vision for the department. Clearly, the department, from the governor's perspective, is intended to serve the people. I've had a chance to talk to some of the staff of the department. I've let them know that it is my objective that we will be servants, public servants first, and we will be stewards of the resources that you have all entrusted us to do, and that we will work diligently on behalf of the people of Minnesota to conserve natural resources into the future for future generations. I have two young children, 13 today. My son's golden birthday is today, and a 10-year-old daughter, and I fully intend that if I have anything to say about it in 4 years, the state's going to be in as good a shape as it was when I started today, and I hope that that will continue into the future, and they will inherit a state as rich and resources and recreational opportunities as we have all had the luxury of inheriting. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, again, I thank you all very much. I'd be delighted to answer any questions if anybody would have any. I know you've got lots of important business to do, and you don't need to hear me filling the room with greenhouse gases.
Thank you. I guess we didn't consider it to be filled with greenhouse gases, but thank you very much for those comments. And I members should know, in talking with the new commissioner, as I have a couple times since his new appointment, he's assured us that he's going to have an open door and that he's also going to meet with each and every one of the senators that would like to have a meeting with him. And prepare yourself. Get ready for those questions that you have for the commissioner when he has the time. 7 hours sounds about right. In the office, 7 hours. But we certainly would appreciate hearing from you and the senators hearing from you here in the near future. So thank you so much for coming.
All right, and thank you all very much.
Members, next on the agenda, we're going to be hearing two overviews. The first from the LCCMR. I think you have some information in your packet with regards to the LCCMR and the workings of that and how it was set up. And Susan Thornton here, the director from LCCMR, is to your left. With other members, both Jeff Roberg and Nancy Gibson, who are also members of the LCCMR, that'll give some short reports. They've got about 45 minutes here to give us a quick overview. And again, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and go ahead.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Nancy Gibson, and I'm currently the co-chair of the LCCMR.
I'm Jeff Broberg. I'm a citizen appointee from the House. I'm a small business owner in Rochester. I'm a licensed professional geologist.
And I'm Susan Thornton, director of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, LCCMR.
Thank all three of you and welcome.
I'll start, if I may, and I'd like to start by thanking you for allowing us to come today and giving a little bit of background about the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. The Citizens came on board about 5 years ago, and we now currently have it structured at the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota's Natural Resources. That's LCCMR. And it's structured that we have three co-chairs and three co-vice chairs. I'm the co-chair of the citizenry. Jeff is the co-vice chair. The House of Representatives also has a co-vice chair, as does the Senate. And we share in our role on the executive committee, and we also take turns chairing the committee. Now, the statute recommends that the citizenry come to the LCCMR with a background in natural resources, and we've complied. We have a geologist. We have a wildlife biologist, we have a retired DNR researcher, a forestry expert, a woman who is head of a women's hunting group, an attorney who specializes in conservation easements, so we have a wide variety of backgrounds. We don't do it for the money, and like you, we care a great deal about our state and want to make sure that we ensure our natural resources are there for the long term and our grandchildren. We spend many, many hours during the summer months. I would equate it to a mini master's, that we spend a lot of time hearing presentations from our top-notch researchers across the state. We hear about innovative ways to do data collecting. We hear about invasive species. We hear about environmental education. And it is really a wonderful opportunity to learn. Also, during the summer, we travel around the state, and we have traveled to every corner of the state. We've seen a lot of problems. We've seen a lot of solutions that the LCCMR funds have provided, and we see ample opportunities. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Susan Thornton, the executive director. Jeff will then speak, and then we'll all stand for questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for this opportunity today. Mr. Chair, you've asked us to come in with a broad overview, kind of that 30,000 feet overview, and that's what we're going to provide for you on the Environment and the Natural Resources Trust Fund, the history, where we're at today, and also the recommendation process of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources to you. In your packets, I hope you have three items that we've provided. One will be a copy of the slides that we'll be quickly going through. The other is a four-pager that is a summary of our soon-to-be finished biennial report to the legislature, and that report is due to your committee, and we will be delivering that tomorrow to your committee and also available to come back and present that to you. And then also kind of a crazy-looking spreadsheet or graph here that is related to the history of both LCCMR, the timeline, and so forth. And as I go through the slides, this graphic may make a little more sense to you, but it's kind of that timeline continuum. All this for your information to take away or ask questions about. just when we think we're all set. Thank you, Mike. Before I get started, I'd like to introduce the other staff. That's my segue there. Sure. Mike Banker, who is just up here assisting. Michael McDonough is there, and Shelley Schreffler also. All staff to you. We are your legislative joint services staff, meaning we staff both the House and the Senate, and we are your nonpartisan staff. So we are resources to you, and I'll keep emphasizing that.
Thank you.
The Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund is Minnesota's first dedicated environmental funding source. And it's the result of three constitutional amendments voted on by the citizens. The first one was voted on in 1988 with a 77% approval rating, and then in 1990, 40% of Minnesota's lottery net proceeds were constitutionally dedicated to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. The very first amendment did not have constitutionally dedicated funding source to it. And then the in 1998, there was another amendment with a 74% approval that reaffirmed the dedication of the lottery proceeds, 40% of the net lottery proceeds, until 2025. The 1990 amendment, had only, not only, but it dedicated it through 2001. So there are those three distinct constitutional amendments in the history of the trust fund. We can only use, it can only be used for projects of a long-term benefit for the environment and natural resources. And what goes into the fund is a combination both of the lottery revenues and investments by the State Board of Investment. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And the last constitutional amendment had it such that what's available for expenditure is 5.5% of the market value each year. Senator Ellen Anderson, a member of the LCCMR, has joined us. I don't know if she wants to say a few words as I keep going through.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Would you like a couple of comments quick?
Oh, Mr.
Welcome,
Chair, thank you. I'm just dropping by to say hello and show my support as a member, a longtime member of the LCCMR, and glad to have some of our citizen members here.
Senator Anderson, how long have you served on that committee?
10 years.
10 years. Thank you.
And I'm the only senator left as of now.
And I should let the rest of you know today that I actually met with Senator Anderson earlier today, and she has thrown herself out there for any questions or any concerns or any guidance whatsoever when it comes to LCCMR. With her experience, she certainly has a wealth of experience. So call on her if you need it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm really going to miss serving on this committee, so it's nice to come visit.
Thanks for coming.
Mr. Chair, if I proceed. I've tried to provide you some slides. These are classic questions that we are asked. And one of those is, from the Minnesota State Lottery, where do the dollars go? And as you can see on the chart in front of you, the pie chart, the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund receives, we call about 7 cents on every dollar. And it's about $30 million a year. That's what that 40% of those net annual proceeds amount to. And that goes from the lottery. Now, the other places that the state lottery dollar goes, obviously you can see the largest part is about 61% for prizes, 13% general fund, and approximately 5% goes both into the game together, goes into the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources Fund. So there are some additional direct dollars from the lottery that go towards natural resources, but the Game and Fish Fund and Natural Resources Fund are statutorily appropriated. And you may wish to speak with your fiscal analysts about those funds a little bit more as you go forward. And then the rest of the lottery dollars are administration and vendor and so forth and retailer commission. So their total revenue in this last fiscal year was approximately $500 million. So once it goes into the trust fund, what happens? That $30 million a year goes into the trust fund. It's invested by the State Board of Investment. Currently, as of the end of the year, and I think Mr. Mueller mentioned this to you at your last meeting, in the trust fund there's approximately $545 million. And of that $545 million, well, it's not the 5.5% is available annually constitutionally for expenditures, for appropriations. So, again, the lottery contribution, 40% of the net lottery proceeds, about 7 cents of every lottery dollar spent. State Board of Investment, the average annual growth rate is approximately 8%. And obviously that's ebbed and flowed quite a bit in the last 10 years, as all of our investments have. What's up before you right now is the actual constitutional language for the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And as you can see in bold, it states the assets of the fund shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And actually, what's available for expenditure, if you look at this language, is the market value of the trust fund June 30th of the even year before the biennium begins. So that means what's available this coming biennium is based on June 30th, 2010. And that amount is available in the market value June 30th, 2010 was $460 million. It's kind of a odd math puzzle. So it's not what's available, what's the market value is June 29th or July 1. It's June 30th constitutionally. And this is the final language of the third amendments that was adopted by the citizens. Minnesota statutes 116P, is the governing statute. And the original statute was in place in 1988 before the first constitutional amendment was adopted. And as you can see in this, it's the reason I put in 16P.03 is statutorily it says that the trust fund also may not be used as a substitute for traditional sources of funding. And I know there's been quite a bit of discussion about that supplement supplant issue. Just wanted to point that out to you. And then also that the LCCMR is to make an annual or biennial legislative bill recommendations for the appropriations, and we are to have oversight over time during the time frame of the expenditures of those appropriations. In 16P.08 on your slides, these eight items are the allowable expenditures. This statutory language, again, has been in place. This has not changed at all since 1988. So briefly, the items are the Reinvest in Minnesota program, the RIM program, research, collection and analysis of information, enhancement of public education and awareness, unique capital projects for preservation and protection, activities that preserve or enhance fish, wildlife, land, air, water, other natural resources. And I want to point out other natural resources are statutorily defined to mean the state outdoor recreation system and the metropolitan regional park system. Administrative expenses from the State Board of Investment, and then administrative expenses related to the LCCMR. Then, along with what's allowed for expenditures, are expenditures that are not allowed. And those six items are, again, in front of you, and it's essentially, number one is Superfund. Two is wastewater treatment facilities. Three, decommissioning of nuclear power plants. Four, hazardous waste disposal facilities. Five, solid waste disposal facilities or projects or purposes inconsistent with the adopted strategic plan. Just throwing up for you a chart that shows you by calendar year how the dollar amount of the market value of the trust fund over time. The very first lottery dollar was sold in spring of 1990. So, again, you can sort of see with those investments. And it's invested, the trust fund is invested by the SBI, 70% stocks and 30% in bonds. And then the amount that has been appropriated over time since 1991, which is the first year of the appropriation from the Environmental Trust Fund, through this most recent legislative session, and actually what will be available this coming year for appropriation. As you can see, we've sort of leveled off a little bit at approximately $25, $26 million a year available. This pie chart shows what types of categories the dollars have gone to since 1991, and it's been approximately $310 million. 740 projects. We use the word project interchangeably with an appropriation usually. So each of those appropriations actually might have 10 actual on-the-ground projects as a part of it, but we use it in a generic sense as if it were an appropriation. And as you can tell, it's parks, trails, natural areas, natural resource information planning, water resources, ag and forestry, environmental ed and outreach, administration, renewable energy, children's environmental health, and critical lands for fish and wildlife habitat protection. Now, we've put these appropriations or projects into these categories, but one of our criteria is multiple benefits. And so often something that's in one category could very well overlap or be put into a different category. I'll use an example of county geologic atlases, which we'll be talking about when we come before you on our recommendations, and DNR spoke to you about on Tuesday. We have that in the natural resource information and planning category. It could very well be in water resources because that is why we do those natural resource data analysis.
Ms. Thornton, I have a question, please. The pie chart we're on right now, then what part of the section here would RIM funding come out of? Traditionally, should you do a RIM project or do some funding for RIM?
Mr. Chair and members, we would categorize that most likely under critical lands, fish and wildlife habitat protection.
Thank you.
I'm going to segue right now, Mr. Chair and members, from the trust fund, how it operates, how it receives the lottery proceeds, into the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resource Membership and Process. The LCCMR, sometimes I affectionately call it the LC squared MR, is made up of 17 members focused, as we say, on the protection, conservation, preservation, enhancement, again, the constitutional language of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and those other natural resources, outdoor recreation system and the Metropolitan Regional Park System. It's made up of 5 members of the House, 5 members of the Senate, and 7 non-legislative citizen members, 5 are who are appointed by the governor, 1 is appointed by the Senate, and 1 by the House. And those 7 citizen members serve staggered 3 to 4 year terms. A little bit of history on the LCCMR, formerly the LCMR. The original LCMR was in place in 1963, reorganized, as Ms. Gibbs, Commission Member Gibson spoke to, into the LCCMR in 2006, where non-legislative members, voting members were added. It's a joint services commission within the Minnesota legislature that we make funding recommendations in legislative bill form to the legislature for these special environment and natural resource projects. By statute, a supermajority of 12 affirmative votes is required for our final legislative bill. Also, on behalf of the legislature, often the commission at the legislature's request has overseen other appropriations, but we do oversee the appropriations from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund and from, in the past, what's called the Oil Overcharge Fund, also the LAWCON funds, and the Great Lakes Protection Account. So for each of these, what I call projects or appropriations, there is a work program. We have progress reports over time, final reports that we are in continuous review and analysis of, to make sure that the appropriations made by the legislature continue with the intent and have the outcomes as proposed. We issue an annual or biennial request for proposal, and again, since 63, approximately $650 million has been appropriated. And I want to back up a little. The former funding source, which is one of the former funding sources, which is noted on this graph, was the Future Resources Fund. That was the original funding source for these types of initiatives, and that was originally from approximately 1 cent a pack of cigarettes and then raised to 2 cents a pack of cigarettes. In 2003, that was put to the general fund. So also kind of emphasizing that it's not just the appropriations recommended you see before you. We have approximately 400 open projects that we are in oversight on and review on over time. And I'm happy to meet with any of you, go over those projects, you know, and what different findings we might have. Met with Senator Kielash earlier this week, and we were talking about some of the early work that the commission had funded in the upper Fort Snelling Bluff, for example. I am going to get you that information. And then also, as I mentioned before, the biennial report, and this is the 11th biennial report coming to the legislature from the LCCMR, excuse me.
Ms. Thornton, could you give the members an idea of the average time span on these, on the projects? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years?
Mr. Chair, members, 2 to 3 years, I would say. Partly, you know, many of these are restoration projects that begin and end in the middle of the field season. And so you're going to need that. 2 years won't do it to really get full field season work. Also, our world's become more complex. And even, you know, many of the acquisitions are taking longer than they might have in earlier years. So we write the appropriation for a time certain availability, a discrete beginning, and a discrete end. And if the dollars are not spent, they can cancel and revert back to the corpus of the trust fund.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly,
I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Senator Peel.
The purchases that land purchases that you make, are they part of the community, or where do the who is in control of those lands?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, members, it varies. Many of them are DNR lands. There are also various grant programs that the commission recommends for funding that are grants to local units of government for regional parks, regional trails, also to the Metropolitan Regional Park System, where those implementing agencies are the purchasers of those lands.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll proceed quickly. Our accomplishments to date, that foundational natural resource data, expansion of parks and trails, protection of critical lands and habitat, restoration activities, research and analysis related to invasive species, forestry, water quality, energy sustainability, and agriculture, and that educational and technical assistance outreach, which I think is critical. We, as Ms. Gibson mentioned, we try and get out and about the state. A critical part of the commission's activity is what we call fact-finding, so be able to get out on the ground, talk to natural resource professionals, local unit of government officials, and others about really what's needed in the region. You know, there's no cookie-cutter approach for the statewide, and what are those regional needs and resources. We've had some joint meetings with the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council and the Clean Water Council, trying, again, making sure there's coordination amongst these funds, not duplication, not overlap. And we also try and pull in expert-led issue seminars, most recently the Gulf oil spill, migratory birds, ecosystem services, shoreline regs, conservation easements, community conservation planning, and emerging tree diseases and pests.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Broberg, a citizen member, and I'd ask to take the opportunity to talk a little about the foundation of our planning and the process that we go through here. I come to this, I was appointed to the task force in 2005 by Governor Pawlenty that recommended the language and some of the operational procedures. And, you know, the thing that I've learned coming from small business and coming into this is the importance of the language and the foundation in the statutes and the Constitution and how frequently we have to refer and re-refer to that to keep on task. And we have a very broad but sharply focused task. When we talk about environment, it's huge, but we say what those elements are. And to that end, the statute, 116P08, requires a strategic plan of this commission. And that's a six-year plan that needs to be updated in odd-numbered years. That was something that took an awful lot of deliberation and fact-finding itself. And one of the main issues in that was there are plans all over the state. We you know, Bowser has a plan and DNR has a plan, and there's a real need to get all of those plans together. We identified five areas in the strategic framework: integrated planning, critical land protection, water and land restoration and protection, sustainability practices, and economic incentives for sustainability. One of the things that came out of that was the commissioning of the University of Minnesota to prepare the state conservation plan, the statewide conservation plan. And we have copies on CD and the text, very comprehensive view where hundreds of professionals and experts from all over the state, not just the university environment, but business leaders and environmental leaders, to identify the key risks about the conservation plan. This was initiated by the Pawlenty administration in 08, and it is a comprehensive inventory with some leading-edge elements. The state has mapped at a township level for land cover, for all of the physical features ranging from roads to drainage ditches and natural areas, and those are all map sets that are included in this plan. It's also given us the basis to review and analyze and understand where to go next with the money. So it has helped really focus and inform us of the RFPs. Maybe the next slide. Our recommendation process really follows that precisely, and it's a multi-step process for competitive proposals. We start out taking those criteria from the strategic plan and identifying an RFP that's open to everyone. Mr. Chair, you asked the question of how long the projects take. You really ought to understand that it's a year longer on the front end of the process. The applicants themselves are working on their project to a great level of detail when they make their application. So for the applicants, it's a year longer than it takes from the funding, and that's uncompensated for them. That's an element that they have to work on and put it all together. It's open to everyone. It's reviewed, evaluated, ranked, and discussed and deliberated. We go through a process. It took me 60 hours last year to read through all of the proposals, 230-some proposals, and ranking them was truly an education. This is an education, and the opportunity that I've had on the commission is to learn so much more about Minnesota, about the science, the technology, the policy, the full range of things that go into this, and that's what we ask our applicants to do. The applicants are the leaders in conservation in Minnesota, whether it's in research or application and on the ground. These are the people that have demonstrated their success and have come back to us with these needs to be funded. So all of this is thrown into the mix, and the recommendations we made for all of these go through a very rigorous process before they're invited for interviews. Those that are interviewed successfully and come to the conclusion of a proposed bill for appropriations at the legislature also undergo a peer review for other outside experts, so that we're sure that we're presenting projects that are worthy and are meeting those goals, and they're subject to detailed work plans. The next slide on the evaluation criteria are multiple, and these are the things that we use to score these projects and to rank them one against the other. I should tell you that there are so many good projects. All of them that we've seen have deserved, are of merit and deserve consideration, and there's never enough money to go around. It's a 4-to-1 or more request for those. So some of them rank high in one of the criteria and low in another. But we're always looking for those priorities from the strategic plan, the multiple benefits that are so important, that if a community can come forward and deal with a wildlife and a water issue, the outcomes, to be very clear about the outcomes so that we know how many acres or what's actually going to be done. Growing the knowledge base. This is an important part where the LCCMR plays a role that some of the other dedicated funds don't fund that research or knowledge base or the mapping. An example is we've just funded the completion of the soil survey. It surprised me to learn that there wasn't a soil survey over the entire state of Minnesota, and that was one of the elements that's been funded. Extent of impacts, innovation, scientific technical basis, urgency, capacity and readiness, and last year jobs. That's what we talked about probably the most through this entire process, knowing the state of the economy and the need to create those jobs. I think the current package that we'll be bringing forward has over 300 full-time equivalent jobs that would start in July of this year. So this is one of the very criteria that we've been looking at. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about that criteria or the process.
Thank you, members. Any questions? Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Broberg, when you talked about the soil survey, was there a specific purpose, and what were we going to do with that data once it was determined?
The soil surveys are publications that are done usually on a county basis, and they're used for a broad range of engineering, farming, land use practices. Almost every ag service in this state has that copy on their desk, and I was surprised to learn in a state like Minnesota we had not completed that mapping, and the LCCMR took that on as one of their more long-range projects to assure that everybody, if you're a planner, a farmer, a logger, whoever that needs information about the ground surface and what's below it and is available to them. So,
yeah. Thank you.
I'm just going to finish.
Senator Anderson.
May I have just a brief moment? I just wanted to, if you don't mind, just about 1 minute of my personal experience being on the LCCMR. I just wanted, because I know there's so many new members on this committee, and just a couple things. One is that, we've had 5 senators, 5 House members. It's a fantastic experience, and we need new people to join in and participate in this. So I want to encourage you to put your name in for appointment for the LCCMR. Senator Frederickson, who's one of our senior members who just retired last year, and I always like to say that being on the LCCMR is like getting a master's degree because you learn so much about our natural resources, about the science, about what different conservation groups are doing around the state. It's an incredible education for us, and we're very lucky to be able to hear from some of the preeminent scientists in Minnesota on the work that they're doing and support some of that research. So that's a great part of the experience. You should also be aware that if you do sign up, it's a huge amount of work, most of which is done in the summer and fall. So we don't do it during the legislative session because there's just not enough time, and we spend a lot of time looking around the state at projects that have been accomplished to understand what's successful, what needs are out there. And, you know, in my time, I've done everything from one of my most fun moments was with Senator Vickerman helping to blow up part of an a mine site up in northern Minnesota, and that was authorized explosives, Mr. Chair. Sheriff.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, no, it was all part of the plan. And climbing down through maybe a 40-inch pipe into a sinkhole cave down in southeastern Minnesota to trace where the water goes, and just all kinds of amazing, interesting experiences and seeing so many things across our state that you might not get a chance to see and understand, so that you can make good decisions. 2 other things quickly I wanted to mention. I've had the privilege of serving both on LCCMR and on the Lessard-Sams Council, and I think you're going to hear from them next. And there's some differences, and I just wanted to point out the LCCMR, because of how it was originally created, how it was authorized in the Constitution and in the statute, has a much broader mission and covers a lot broader categories, including research and environmental education and other things. So just to keep that in mind when you compare the two. The last thing is that We have a tradition of really being nonpartisan in our work, and that's one thing that makes it so refreshing to work with the LCCMR, and we have a mixture of legislators and citizens who come with great amounts of experience and expertise, and just like the Lessard Stamps Council, it's a really nice way to do our legislative business, and we bring our packages forward and tend to have broad bipartisan support for them, and that's been a real pleasure for me.
Thank
That's
you,
all
Senator.
I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. That was a real good flavor for those members who might want to have that in mind moving forward and applying for these positions. Ms. Thornton, one last question. This year is a two-year biennium, two-year expenditure. Is that normal? Does a statute say it's a one-year? And if it does say that, how do you get around that? Help me with that. I was looking at that this afternoon, and then I had to run off to a meeting. Have you done two-year before?
Mr. Chair and members, the statute says it may either be annual or biennial. And the prior to 2006, to the reorganization of the LCMR into LCCMR, it was always a biennial recommendation to the legislature. In legislative years 2007, 8, 9, and 10, those 4 years, the commission has recommended annual funding to you. This last January, there was quite a bit of deliberation, discussion, looking at time commitments, looking at natural resource needs that are out there right now, and the commission is bringing forward to the legislature this session a biennial recommendation. And it leads into the next slide of in fiscal year 2010 and 11, approximately $25.5 million was recommended each year. And this coming year, approximately $51.4 million is being recommended from the trust fund and from LawCon funding for these proposals. And this would be for the upcoming biennium. And so the commission will be focused, if as adopted by the legislature, this next year the commission would be focused on further program project evaluation, revising the strategic plan, getting ready for the next RFP, and then also out there on site visits. And the commission members have expressed a desire to be able to do more site visits than we have in the last couple of years. We've been pushing a lot of paper and really get out there in that part of the evaluation process. And we as staff pride ourselves on getting our members and committee members out to some parts of the state you might not have been to. We haven't lost a member yet, I promise. But we always try and make sure that if we're in your district, that you're informed, you're invited. And we also try and work closely with the committee, Senator, so that if you wish to make sure that some of your members are invited on some of these site visits, that they are always welcome.
Great. Chair. Thank you.
Chair, can I,
Mr. Broberg,
may I make a comment about the annual versus biennial? I was on the task force when we originally recommended annual appropriations, and I've changed my mind about that. I was a little naive about the function of the commission and the importance of being able to do the issue seminars and the field trips. And it is what we've learned is that we get approximately the same number of applications no matter if it's an annual or a biennial recommendation. My motivation for proposing annual originally was in respect of the applicants, for fear that they might have a project that takes them 2 years to get approved. And that's a huge waste of human capital to have them dogging that when these researchers and scientists and land managers should be working. So I think the probably smarter minds prevailed and went back to the biennial so this committee could function with a year of learning and trips and forming the strategic plan and putting the mark on the future, and then the next year do an RFP based on what you've learned. So that's where we're at today, and that's why we have a two-year this year. Thank you.
And if I may add something, Senator? In this respect, we're going from 1 year to 2 years. We also set aside some emerging funds And when the BP oil spill happened, we were actually able to have some experts come in and see how that is going to affect Minnesota. We certainly know our loon population is going to be affected. So that gave us some flexibility on some funds to deal with some emerging issues.
Interesting. Okay. Any other questions from the three witnesses? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very informative meeting.
Thanks. Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. We're here. We're in room 65 of the State Office Building. We're your staff. We're available to assist you in any way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
From here, we'll let the Executive Director from Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage, Bill Becker, come forward. And members, during the meeting, if you will, another house cleaning issue. If I happen to be having my head down reading, which I just happened with Senator Kielash, would you please wave at Mike here, and you'll put your name down and or tap me or something. I might miss you. I didn't miss you on purpose. So just do that. And not so much in this, so much, but in bills and stuff, it'll be handy to do that. Just put your name. Senator Higgins.
While Mr. Becker is setting up, the music that you hear out in the rotunda is an organization called Cantus. And they are also funded through legacy funds, through the arts and culture section of legacy.
Senator Higginson, where are they from? From all over the state or from here?
There are eight gentlemen. They have a lot of sound for eight people.
They sure do. Yeah.
And they're quite wonderful. I skipped out for a little bit to go listen to them.
Oh,
and
that's what you did.
They are going to go on tour. They will be in Ely and Ely, St. Peter, Grand Rapids, and Crookston in February and March.
Oh, good. Thank you for that. Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much for coming. Mr. Becker, as some of you may or may not know, is the Executive Director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and he, along with two other staff members, are here to do a short, brief 43-minute presentation on that part of the Constitution that was just passed in 2004, at least one-third of those dollars.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, 2008. Sorry.
For the tape, I am Bill Becker. I am the Executive Director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Behind me and to my right are two of my staff members, Sandy Smith and Heather Koop. We, like the LCCMR staff, are joint staff to the House and the Senate. We are your staff. We welcome your questions and provide you with as much help as we can. As a way of background, I've worked for the Department of Natural Resources for 33 years prior to becoming the inaugural executive director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. In your package, you'll find a copy of the PowerPoint presentation, a copy of the Lasard Sam's Council's request for funding, a sheet that shows the question put before the voters in November of 2008, a copy of Minnesota Statutes 97A.056, which is our organizing statutes, and last but not least, a map of the state that shows the recommended and appropriated projects from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I'll refer to these briefly as we go through the presentation. The Outdoor Heritage Fund is one of four funds created by the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. It receives a third of the increase in the state's sales tax of 0.375%. The other funds are the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, and the Arts and History Funds. We began receiving funds in October of 2009. There's a delay between the imposition of a tax and when it's actually collected. We estimate that in any fiscal year, there will be approximately $80 to $90 million being deposited in the fund. And we spend out of those deposits, or recommend spending out of those deposits. The Council's mission is in the Constitution. It's in Article 11, Section 15. and it's to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. It must supplement traditional sources. It may not be used as a substitute. That's a little different language. The Environmental Trust Fund is can't supplant. This is a simple substitution. It cannot substitute. Land acquired under this with this fund must be open to the public taking of fish, game during the open season unless otherwise provided by law. And you'll learn that when the Constitution uses the term law, it means state law, not local law or federal law, but state law. Let's talk a little bit about the duties of the council. They are rather simple. We make annual recommendations requiring a supermajority of 9 council votes. We prepare and maintain the Outdoor Heritage Fund plan and 25-year framework. We are instructed to create a Conservation Partners Program, which is a grants program for local clubs, local units of government, things of that sort. We're required to manage conflicts of interest, so that is follow the state grant-making procedures, and oversee projects. We want to make sure that the legislative objectives and the appropriations are met. Briefly on council membership, it's a 12-member council, 4 legislative members, 2 members of the Senate, and 2 members of the House, 8 citizen members, 2 appointed by the Senate, 2 appointed by the House, and 4 appointed by the governor. Potential appointees are evaluated on geographic balance, gender, age, ethnicity, and background in natural resource management, including hunting and fishing. And the members are advisory to the Minnesota legislature. We can't spend a dime. You all have to appropriate it. The governor has to sign it. Recipients of the fund. Over the 2 recommendations that have been appropriated, we've had, looks like, 42 programs funded. Our emphasis is on funding ongoing programs where we can find programs that have objectives that are similar to ours, and year after year after year invest in those habitat objectives. We feel that that's the most appropriate way to make sure that at the end of 25 years there's a palpable result in habitat in Minnesota by funding the same categorical types of programs year after year after year. So you'll see in our recommendation an annual appropriation in each of the years for the Aquatic Management Area Program. You'll see an annual appropriation for the Waterfowl Production Area Program. And the money is fed into these ongoing programs, and they create the habitat. We also fund non-government organizations, local regional government, federal government, and the state government.
Mr. Becker, could you give the group an idea of the federal government, what agencies that we deal with?
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is the primary agency that we deal with. Also, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS, provides match for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. In the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they maintain a system of waterfowl production areas, which are upland areas adjacent to wetlands and are the primary habitat for ducks, a variety of songbirds, and pheasants.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the council planning process. We've divided Minnesota into 5 ecological sections as required by statute. These are based on the ecological sections of the Department of Natural Resources. In the course of the process, we reviewed statewide habitat plans for their policy and investment goals. To each section, we developed a vision and priority for each section, and to do this, we met with conservation professionals in each ecological section. We held public meetings. We did a field review of issues, and we incorporated the vision and priorities into the call for requests in your packet. So if you look toward the end of this, you'll see for each section what the vision is of council members and what the priorities for funding are. just to demonstrate, those are the ecological sections, and you'll note that they're not the usual planning districts or things of that sort. The seven-county metropolitan area isn't represented on here. It is the ecological area that is represented by the seven-county metro area, and it extends out toward St. Cloud and to the west. So I want to talk just briefly about our 25-year funding framework. It's required in Minnesota Statutes 97A.056, and it's to be delivered to the has been delivered to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In order to do this, we convened an advisory group of conservation leaders, and they recommended and helped us appoint a working group of scientific professionals to prepare the plan. These were local, state, and federal agencies that provided these people. Over the course of 6 months, they met and devised the plan, and we received public comment, and it was forwarded to the LCC. It was it's available on the web, and if you, Mr. Chair, if you all are interested, we have the consultants who helped us do this under contract to come give a presentation on the framework and plan, if that's of interest to you. The council's process, let's talk a little bit about their objectives. The council wants the recommendations to be guided by science and best practices based on local conservation expert advice. We're seeking a transparent process that's accessible to the public, that protects and advances the public interest, and considers public input, existing habitat planning delivery systems. We want efficient and effective conservation solutions, and we want to ensure that the benefits are geographically distributed. And that's the reason I prepared the map of the past recommendations so that you can see the geographic distribution of the projects by type of project. You'll notice that they are color-coded, enhance, protect, restore, protect and enhance, which some projects or programs are combinations, and restore and enhance and protect, restore and enhance.
Question, Mr. Becker, the map that you have here with the dots, that's the total projects from the beginning to date?
That have been recommended and appropriated. It does not reflect our upcoming recommendations.
Okay. Thank you.
Council considerations in crafting the recommendations. They look at payment in lieu of taxes. You'll hear a great deal about that. The condition of public lands, we'll hear about that. Substituting versus supplementing, we try to supplement, not substitute. We look at the recommendations from the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund, the Clean Water Fund and Parks and Trails Fund appropriations, and past bonding allocations. Public land ownership patterns are a consideration, and collaborative work with leveraged fund is an important item that we look for. Excuse me. The recommendations process is somewhat similar to the LCCMR's. It's conducted over a series of public meetings from June through December. We, in the summertime, conduct statewide issues or fact-finding tours and receive public testimony. And then we issue a public open call for requests for outdoor heritage funding. There are, I believe, one, two, three, four, five items that are in blue on this chart, this page. Those are the due diligence steps that the council goes through to make sure that the appropriations that they're recommending are to qualified people who have the ability to carry out the projects that they are, programs that they are proposing. So that we review and evaluate each proposal. We select proposals that are presented to the program by the program manager to the council. It's about a half an hour hearing. It could vary. We allocate funds to the top proposals, and then we review the balance between activities and regions to make sure that the balance is correct. And then we review accomplishment plans for the recommended appropriations. These are incorporated into a bill, the jackets of which are transmitted to the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader, who assigns the authors for the bill. And then the recommendations bill is processed. So you all do your stuff, and we enjoy it. The council recommendations to date in Minnesota laws of Minnesota 2009, there was $85 million. In laws of Minnesota 2010, there was just under $59 million. The number of programs funded was 19 and 23, respectively. We also recommended about $4 million in each of those session years to the Conservation Partners Legacy Grants Program, and they awarded in the first year 34 and the second year 35 Conservation Partner Grants. I want to talk just a little bit about the Conservation Partners Grants. Our organizing statutes requires the council to encourage local support and local conservation efforts by establishing a Conservation Partners Program.
I'm sorry, Senator Saxart, has got a question.
And I'm sorry I didn't wave you down sooner, Mr. Chair, but thank you. Mr. Becker, when we look at these programs funded, and there was in 2009, $85 million, and 19 projects. So there's some marquee projects that you'd point to that that maybe we'd all recognize. And
thank you for that question.
Yeah, you bet.
Obviously, these are larger projects than you might normally see. And one of the marquee projects was, in fact, the marquee project for the council, was the Forest for the Futures easement program, which protected 190,000 acres of industrial forest, working forest land, to keep it from being fragmented through development, and to allow comprehensive management of our forests, to allow the Blandin foresters, the state foresters, and the federal foresters to manage on a stand basis. Ownership lines don't respect stands, stand being the unit that you manage a forest by. And the Forest for the Futures program enables management on the stand basis. It also provides access for hunting and fishing, although that was paid for by as far as we can determine, by matching dollars, because the Constitution doesn't allow access as a purpose for this fund per se. So that would be the marquee project. I think that the funding of the aquatic management areas is another one that's of primary importance. And the waterfowl production area expansion is one that's a key project.
Thank you for that.
Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. The statutes require the council to encourage and support local conservation efforts by establishing this program. It's for matching grants to local, regional, or state or national organizations. And it is for restoration, protection, and enhancement of wetlands, prairies, forest, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. Over $4 million is recommended by the council per year. And the program is administered by DNR. It's a competitive program, juried awards selected by resource professionals. The projects, it's euphemistically called the small grants program. The projects can be up to $400,000, require a sliding match between 10 and 15%. There's a special simplified program for, in the current recommendation, for grants of under $25,000. Let's take a quick look at some measures of success to date. And I want to just off the bat say that we're in the process of trying to transition from judging our success based on outputs to judging our success based on outcomes. It's difficult in the natural resource world to do this. The outputs are acres protected, enhanced, and that sort of thing. The outcomes are more fish and wildlife, game, stronger ecological systems, and things of that sort. And we hope to be able in the years to come to transfer to more of an outcome-based measure of success. You can see this marquee easement project in Minnesota laws of 2009. We have protected by fee almost It looks like 18,000 acres. We protected by easement over 200,000 acres. We've done restoration of over 10,000 acres and enhancement of nearly 50 or just over 50,000 acres. We've touched 300 or 450 miles of shoreline, impacted most of the counties of Minnesota, and we've leveraged other dollars at the rate of about 50 cents to the dollar. If you want to look at the same information by ecotype or biome, we can do that. So let me just summarize. The Outdoor Heritage Fund is constitutionally dedicated to protecting, restoring, and enhancing Minnesota's forests, prairies, wetlands, and habitat in general. It must not substitute for traditional funding. The statute directs the council to make recommendations to the legislature on how to spend the Outdoor Heritage Fund money, and the council engages in an open, thoughtful, and deliberate process to arrive at its recommendations. If you have more questions, we're located in room 95 of the State Office Building. You have in your packet our telephone numbers. Feel free to call, drop in. We're there 24 hours a day, it seems like these days. We're there during normal business hours. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that report. A couple of questions, if I may. Let's talk about the percentage of dollars for administrative. And I apologize for not asking Susan that same question, but 4% for LCCMR, and what percent out of the is used for administrative costs?
About 0.5%. We are authorized up to 1%, but we have been requesting about 0.5%.
Mr. Knopf can add something.
Mr. Chairman, when I mentioned the 4% for LCCMR, that's the maximum. I don't think they use quite that much. We could probably get the numbers from Susan, but that's the maximum. The maximum for the Lessard-Sams Council is 1%.
Okay. And to clarify that for the members that may or may not understand, that does not come out of the general fund. That comes out of the funds from the revenue source. So these are not general fund dollars for administering these.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. The fund carries its own weight.
Could you elaborate a little bit about the collaborative work and leveraging funds? I know that's always an interesting discussion that we have in that particular committee, the amount of dollars that we actually leverage.
Well, the leverage includes other state funds, so it's different than other people often define it. But we're very interested in making sure that we coordinate and collaborate with the other funds, and so like the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Funds, and things of that sort. So that's one reason that the leverage funds include those. But those leverage funds are funds that are brought to the table as a result of our recommendations and your appropriations. They are covered under the working agreement that we have with each recipient and reviewed just like the Outdoor Heritage Funds. They are real dollars that are actually spent. A little bit about collaboration, a little more about collaboration. In natural resource work, there are NGOs, non-governmental organizations, there are local units of government, there are state, federal units of government, and no one person has all the answers or has all the control and access to the land. So we look for programs that look to use the best talents of the NGOs and then the best talents of the agencies and things of that sort. As an example, one of our collaborative programs is a program whereby Pheasants Forever buys land and then deeds it over to the state wildlife management area program. The state DNR is best suited to manage those lands. PF has good acquisition talent and are able to, in a forthright way and relatively quick way, close land acquisition deals. So that's an example of a collaborative project.
Thank you. Another question that might be of interest to the group is the always popular TLT tilt payment. Could you comment a little bit on that? And I think we've discussed that, I think, just in our first meeting, that TILT payment is no longer going to be administered through this budget. However, just for those members that don't understand what TILT payment is about.
I'll do my best, Mr. Chair.
Thanks.
Payment in lieu of taxes is a program that provides state funding to local units of government when the state owns land in a county, for example. The payments go to the county. They're distributed to townships in some cases and to school districts in other cases. I believe that's the case. The total PILT payments in the state of Minnesota by the state run about $20 million a fiscal year. Our programs have added to that at the rate of about $100,000 to $150,000 a year for each recommendation package. When we bring the bill through this committee, you will see for each appropriation recommendation our estimate of the payment in lieu of taxes that it will create.
Thank you, and I think in fairness to everyone, to understand the PILT a little bit more, there was a most recent, and maybe you can comment on this as well, Executive Becker, but with regards to the, there was an audit. There was an audit report that was put out, and I think through my opinion, at least in my reading of the report, it kind of put some of the idea to rest that PILT payment was not paying adequately. In other words, government PILT was not paying adequately compared to private citizen. Is that a fair statement, or am I really going out on a limb here on this one?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a fair statement. The payment in lieu of taxes, according to the auditor, paid in excess of what the county would have gotten from the land had it remained in private hands and not been developed, which is something that was not known until the state auditor inspected it.
Very good. Any questions at all? Senator Saxok.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's fair to recognize that what we're talking about here in terms of land management, one of the ways to manage land or to help improve and restore and enhance property is through fee purchase, in which case we get into the payment in lieu of taxes. But if we do conservation easements, for instance, those lands, although they'll be managed in a way that I think we think is important, we'll continue to pay taxes. Or there'll be, over the years, I'm sure there'll be exchanges and other ways of managing land, and all those will show, for the most part, no net loss in taxes. So there's different ways of managing land, and one of them is fee purchase. It can be important and is in certain areas, but it's not the whole story.
Thank you, Senator. And it should also be known that the group, with regards to PILT payment, got a ruling from the asked for and received a ruling from the Attorney General's office that the dollars could not be expended from the LaSalle Outdoor Heritage dollars for PILT payment. So we went over that hurdle and found out we couldn't do that either. So that's been covered. Senator Kielesh?
Well, I guess that was my question, is whether or not the LaSard is budgeting on an annual basis to make the PILT payments, or by project, or is there any way, since they're not doing it that way, so whenever they buy land that requires PILT funding, that comes out of the general fund?
That's correct. Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielesh, that is correct. The PILT payments are used for roads and schools and police, and those aren't constitutional uses of the fund.
Okay.
So that's kind of the nutshell of what the Attorney General had to say. Now, the Attorney General's letter was 2 to 3 pages, mm-hmm. So there was more than just that. But that, I think, is the key finding. in their non-opinion. The Attorney General won't produce an opinion unless there's a court case, so they'll advise.
Just to follow up on
Senator
that,
Kielash.
So the more land you purchase that requires PILT payments, the more the budget at the general fund dollars have to rise. I don't know if there's any consideration in the decisions of what you choose to fund based on that.
Mr.
Chair, I think that that is a consideration. The question, though, really comes down in the end to conservation and building habitat. And you've pretty much got to have the land to do it on. Mm-hmm. And the council's take on land acquisition is the council isn't in the business of being concerned about how much land the state has. Our concern is where that land is, that the state has the right land. And we've publicly expressed that. And so it's important to continue to acquire, especially in habitat complexes. Our operational goal is 4 to 6 square miles, 20% wetlands, 40% uplands, I believe, and 40% private working. We're seeking to establish those complexes primarily in the non-forested area of the state. Those types of complexes have been determined by the scientists at the Department of Natural Resources and the Fish and Wildlife Service to be optimal habitat production areas.
Senator, and Mr. Bicker, you use the term complexes. Isn't there also the term corridor? I mean, that's important to understand, too, that we just, when we do a land acquisition or look at acquisitions, we don't just go out and buy one in the middle of nowhere. We would prefer to buy a if we do end up buying, it is in a corridor where there is a WMA connecting the two, again, I think he calls them complexes, but corridors. So,
Mr. Chair, a much clearer expression of what I was trying to say.
Oh, I'm sure it was, yes. Thank you. Senator Gazalka.
I didn't raise my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I will ask then, Minnesota already is a large landholder. Do we have any thoughts of, and maybe this is to the speaker as well, releasing some of our lands? If we're picking up critical lands, are we releasing lands that maybe aren't as important?
Senator, yes, to that point, actually, I think next Thursday on the agenda we'll be looking at the lands bill. Every year there's a lands bill that comes forward, that comes through this committee. I think it was a subcommittee that we had previously, and where the DNR is selling land, and maybe 3 years ago, somebody step up and correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a bill in the legislature to recover $6 million worth of land because of that issue. People obviously thought that there was getting to be a little imbalance here. And so it is an issue. We move forward. We're of course, right now you're going to hear a report from the DNR, and they're going to tell you that selling land, of course, is not an easy task because nobody is able to sell anything right now. So we're going to be looking at giving them the authority actually to hopefully be able to sell at a reduced rate so we can get rid of some land that's no longer useful to us. So that's coming in the coming weeks.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
You answered the question. Thank you.
Thank you. We're very thorough here, aren't we?
Very good. I'm impressed.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
If there are no other questions, I just want to thank the committee and for listening. And once again, extend an invitation to come and see us and ask questions, and we'll provide detail on any of the programs recommended funding for, that is. And we'll spend whatever time it takes to get you the answer that you need.
Thank you for the report. And members, you can talk to me because I've been on the committee since its inception, but if you really want to get the details as to what the workings of it and how it goes about, please do stop in to see their office. They're always open, and they're very helpful and very informative. So. Any other questions? Thank you very much. If there's nothing else before the committee, there is nothing else before the committee, at least not on the agenda. Next Tuesday, you can look for a report.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry.
And
Senator Keelan.
Do you have any more information about the road trip?
Oh, no, I don't have any info. Do you have any information yet? We're still working on the details there for the trip up to Hibbing.
To Hibbing?
Yeah, we're having a hard time to find a place up there to have a meeting, but hopefully we'll have that by next week. Does that sound good?
Is there a reason for the trip? That's the other question. Or the
leadership. Actually, leadership decided to have. I think we're going to have a combined jobs and as well as environmental committee up there. And informational only. We're not going to be hearing any bills, making any decisions. So. But we'd certainly like you all to be present at that meeting. And it's always good. I know the previous senator tried to get out as often as he could. We did go to Bemidji, and I think that was a real helpful trip. I mean, we had a very good crowd there, actually, from the north and northeast part of the state that came in and gave their input. And some of it was good, and some of it turned out to be not so good. But nevertheless, we put ourselves out there and on these trips for that reason, and I think it's a good idea. So. Again, for Tuesday's meeting, we'll be tentative talking about the report from Bowser and the Conservation Corps and possibly some questions and maybe some other working groups and conservation groups. So with that, we stand adjourned.
Good weekend.
So you're going to stay with us, huh?
I don't know.